This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Right, very warm welcome everybody to this first workshop on business planning and performance management. My name's Sue Richards and I work for Together for Children and I'm here with Trudy Cawthorne from the National College for School and Children's Services Leadership and Sarah Tatu, who's the Lead Children's Centre Manager for Suffolk. We want to allow plenty of time for discussion and for taking some issues from you back to the department. As you've heard, this is a really key opportunity for us to feed information back about what we think the key things are in order to deliver value for money and to think about payment by results. So we'll look at those two questions at the end. We obviously assume that this isn't your first discussion about business planning and performance management, because if it is, we certainly can't teach you a great deal in 20 minutes. So what we're hoping to do is just pinpoint some resources, introduce you to some ideas, tell you where some of the products and information is, give you some one example from Suffolk about good practice. We know there are plenty more, but this is one that I think will interest you. Then we'll allow 20 minutes or so at the end for discussion. So I hope that's all okay. Good. Trudy's going to make a start on business planning.
My experience of technology is that it doesn't usually work, so I brought handouts with me with all my slides on, so they're just going around, so they'll make their way around to you. As Sue said, my name is Trudy Cawthorne, and I'm from the National College for Leadership of Schools and Children's Services. And like Sue said, we haven't got all the answers for you, and I'm kind of feeling the imposter syndrome at the moment, because I'm not an expert on financial management or business planning. But where my expertise are with the college are around the MPQICL programme, and MPQICL has some really good materials on financial management, so this is where I'm bringing my presentation to you from today, and we will make these materials available to everyone, whether you're part of the MPQICL programme or not, so they will be available on the college website. Okay, right, technology next. Perfect. So first of all, it's all about the importance of data. Now, data is fundamental to all planning processes, really, whether they're financial planning, business planning, any sort of planning. You need to start with your data. You need to know where you're starting from, and you need to know where you want to get to, that is, what you want to achieve, and then ultimately, whether or not you've actually achieved that. And I think that's where Sue will come in on her performance management. So data can provide that picture for you. So what are the demographics of your community? How many children are in your reach area? What's the level of unemployment? All of that type of data will help you to plan and prioritise your services and then strategise around that, obviously. This is going to come increasingly important as we move to an era of less resources with a growing focus on impactful results, hence payment by result. So, what data is available to you at the moment? There's the CEF, or now as it's known, the Performance Achievements and Outcomes Review, which contains levels of teenage pregnancy, levels of lone parents, your BME groups, and those with disabilities. You've got data available through your local authority on educational attainment, social care, your looked after children, and then other organisations like the police force that can give you statistics on local crime, on domestic violence, on racial crime, your PCT, on the prevalence of mental illness, asthma, breastfeeding, smoking, childhood obesity. All of this data will feed into your business planning and financial planning. So I suppose what I'm saying there is that data is fundamental, and I just wonder how many of you reflect on what data is available to you and whether your planning and prioritising processes are really data rich. Okay, so moving on to the effective use of resources. Children's centres need to deliver results that are evidence-based and derived from well-informed decisions. So monitoring, first of all. It's required to understand what your inputs are, i.e. what money you're putting in there, and what your outputs are. So to know the number and percentage and profile of the families accessing and benefiting from your services. Cost effectiveness. What works for whom and at what cost? You need to balance expenditure with the results to justify the decisions that you are making. So, to put it really simply, what are your inputs? What are your outputs? What are your outcomes? So when you're planning the budget, you need to think about what you're trying to achieve, why you're trying to achieve it, and then ultimately how you're going to evaluate that. The budget should be based on available data and what your local priorities are. Your evaluation, how well are you doing? Monitor your budget, monitor your services, and monitor the impact. Budget management is really a reflective process. It's cyclical, it's not a static process. It shouldn't be considered in isolation, and it should be linked through to all other areas of your performance management. Evaluating in terms of impact leads to the development of an effective evidence base for what works, and it provides information that can create a cycle where continuous efforts are made to maximise resources for the maximum benefit. Okay, really, this is just a diagram. A nice diagram, but it illustrates what I've been saying. So you need to monitor there what your inputs are, to look what your outputs are, and then obviously to measure your outcomes and the impact on children and families. It's very much that effort and effect balance that you're looking for. Okay, evaluating efficiency, value for money. We've heard it quite a lot today, and Charlotte Ramsey, I'm not sure if she's in the room now, but I think she gave quite a good example of how they're demonstrating value for money within their local authority. But value for money isn't just about what's cheap. It's about gaining maximum benefit from what you're doing. So it's not purely about cost. You need to consider quality, resource usage, timeliness, and suitability. You can consider value for money in a number of terms, but I quite like economy, efficiency, and effectiveness. So economy is all about doing less with fewer resources. Efficient is about doing the same but with fewer resources. And then effectiveness, doing more with the same. And I think where we'd all aspire to be is the doing more with the same. And I think that's kind of where the push is at the moment for value for money. Local priorities. Are you meeting these? So when you've looked at your data at the start and you've set your strategy, when you come back to monitor it and review it, are you meeting those local priorities? Is your strategy in line with the local authorities, with the children's centres in your area? You need to build all this data into your thinking when you're planning your finances. Measuring outcomes, probably really key at the moment, I'd say. And it's the main measure of children's centre effectiveness. So what worked well, what needs improving, what isn't cost effective, and what isn't good value for money. All of that information, as well as evidencing your outcomes, will feed into your future planning cycles. So it's all about it being that cycle. Okay, and this really is just, again, to demonstrate that it is very much a planning cycle and it's not a static process. So you need your data at the start to feed in so that you can set your priorities in line with the priorities of the local authority and the community in which you're serving. And then you need to measure your productivity, so what effort are you putting in, and then measure your outcomes, what effect is coming out of it. And then that's an ongoing cycle, so that information then feeds back into the start. Okay, so that's it from me, really. I said at the start I wasn't going to give you any answers, and I haven't given you any answers, but hopefully that's kind of some useful principles just to bear in mind and always reflect on the importance of data in planning, and are you accessing all the data that is available to you.
Thank you, Julie. My background is in social care. I only latterly came towards the end of my local government career to be managing education services as well. But I well remember when Quality Protects first came in 10-12 years ago now. And although it was a real struggle to find good data to begin with, as it is for you in children's centres, it became very empowering. It seemed to me really, really important that you knew, you know, how your neighbours were doing. You knew what you were good at. You knew what you were less good at. And we're still at the very beginnings of that with children's centres. So my first slide, I just thought it was useful to... Oh, blast!
Oh, right. What am I going to do now, then? I can do without them.
Oh, blast.
I gave it that very clearly. Anyway, we can go back. Sorry, ruining your presentation. Blast. That's it. Okay. What's all this about?
Somebody helping me.
Oh, right, okay, thank you. Fine. Next one.
Right, so for me, the great benefits of performance management are knowing where you are, learning from others, planning for improvement, having a mechanism for listening to what children and families are saying to us. I think that's something we've really learned in the last 10 years. Improving life chances and measuring your own progress. So it's not just about comparing yourself with others. It's about measuring your own year-on-year improvement. And I do think that's a conversation that's worth having with your children and families in the centre. I was really pleased that people talked earlier about sharing costing information with children and families. That hadn't occurred to me before, but I thought that was really useful. But also with your advisory board and with, I know children's trusts are likely to be going, but with whatever replaces the Children's Trust, your members perhaps. So it's really important to kind of think what all of that is for. This is from C4EO, and I mean, how many of you use the C4EO website? I know it's all fairly new. A number of you. It is well worth getting the hang of. There is an early years section on there, and as you'll have heard some people talk about earlier, it is quite a rigorous process to get information onto their website. It's an amalgamation of the old Social Care Research in Practice and of the NFER Educational Research Foundation. And the work that they're developing on early years is pulling together key messages for which they think there is good evidence. And those are the ones that they've got listed at the front at the moment. I mean, there are other base documents too. I had another look at the Reaching Families information. Reaching Out Think Family. It's 2 or 3 years old now, but that was a then DCSF publication that has quite a good bit of national baseline data and worth going back to, I think. The other document that's come out just in the last week, so I'm sorry it's not up there, but I was away last week, but I think it's worth mentioning because it's very much a new coalition document. And this is the Department of Health's document called Achieving Equity and Excellence for Children. It's a children's version of the health white paper. How many of you have seen that? Well, I will just highlight some headlines from there for you, because I think it is quite helpful. Like some of the reassurance you got this morning, it did specify that, you know, it is primarily health, but it has children's centres running through it, so it's really helpful. It talks about children's services needing to move higher up the list of priorities. It talks about delivering outreach alongside health visiting. So although Sally Burlington's message was pretty careful and coded this morning, I mean, there is the odd sentence in writing there about how that will happen. It talks about 24/7 urgent care service for families, i.e. diverting families from A&E and finding some method of delivering child and family-friendly services round the clock in local areas. Don't know quite what that means. It talks about a green paper on SEN and disability in the autumn. It talks about dropping targets without clinical outcomes, so particularly waiting lists. But I hope that means that at least some of the targets, some of the measures, breastfeeding and so on, which we all know to be absolutely key and of real, real importance, may be staying. So I hope those are some of the things that we may be able to use when comparing children's centre service delivery in the future and when thinking about payment by results. It talks about involving GPs, particularly the Munro Review on Child Protection has been asked to look at that. It talks a little bit about explaining payment by results for children's centres, but that they will include health outcomes. It talks about social enterprise delivery. It talks about moving children's health improvement as a responsibility to local authorities. Now, I think that's quite interesting. I know public health may go to local authorities. I don't quite know how you separate out children's health improvement from children's health delivery, but that's up for discussion. And it talks about GPs pooling commissioning and therefore possibly delegating commissioning children's health services to local authorities. And we know that though children's trusts and local children's plans are likely to go, the strategic needs assessments will remain, it suggests. So there will be some overall planning within your area. So I hope that's some reassurance that some measures will remain. Yes, I tell you what I will do. This will be circulated, and I'll add a slide on this. It's just, I was away last week, and it only just came out a few days ago. It's Achieving Equity and Excellence for Children. How liberating the NHS will help us meet the needs of children and young people. Find that on the DH website. Okay, that's just a performance management cycle. This one is just about getting started. I only put these in just in case they're useful for when you're doing performance management talks with your staff. So this one's about getting started, and this one's about the annual cycle and the real importance of, you know, a circular process of collecting and analysing data, evidencing soft outcomes, feeding those into annual conversations, and then making sure that what you learn from that is fed into next year's plans. And then a little bit about TFC support. You'll know that we only have a life now of 6 months, and we will be winding down during that 6 months. Responsibilities for things like designations, full core offers, meeting the sufficiency of children's centre duty, all of those things will be gradually passed across to local authority over the next 6 months, and we will be doing workshops with you about those things. But we have agreed with the DfE that there are a number of topics which we need to focus on. It was already mentioned about the finance unit costing work that was a pilot in North East Links. That is now becoming available in regions through TFC. So talk to your regional, your local advisor if you want to be involved in that. And a second stream is performance management and evidencing outcomes, and I and a colleague are leading on that. And again, there will be a number of pieces of work and materials available over the next few months. One of the biggest things that people have talked to us about, partly the baseline data, and there is a pack now, going on the website any day now, we're updating the current pack on demonstrating outcomes. These are the templates that tell you what data you can find where, the data that's in the PAOR, and where you can find that. If anybody's not familiar with that, either email me or speak to me between the two sessions. So there's the hard data, which there already is a pack about. There's the collating soft outcomes, and it was really interesting, I thought, to hear the Ofsted comments about how important that is. You know, case studies, individual tracking of children, all of those things, although they don't add up to hard, comparable data, they are really, really helpful and important, and we will be providing some materials about how you might collate those. And the third strand of our work is just about helping people embed the process that I've just gone through. I think most of you have got that into place, but we are able to offer some help with that as well. The other key piece of work people have raised recently is the PAOR and the Ofsted CEF, and how difficult it is having two of those documents. Whatever Ofsted say, it feels complicated having the two documents. So I have said I will try and do a combined version over the next month or two. Does anybody have a version that they think they've combined the Ofsted CEF and PAOR? No, well, it obviously isn't that easy, but I will have a go at picking out the two different things. You're familiar with the DCSF CEF, the self-evaluation form, was really unfortunate. The revised version came out at exactly the same moment as the Ofsted CEF came out last autumn or something, and whenever that was. And that did cause a certain amount of confusion. The PAOR, as Trudy mentioned, is the Performance Assessment and Outcomes Review. It's just the new name for the old DCSF. Okay? So you're not required to complete either of those. And some local authorities have developed their own. But obviously, there's a real anxiety with Ofsted kind of knocking on the door that you have got the right evaluation kind of ready and up and running. Quite. Absolutely. So I don't know whether it's possible to combine them, but that's what people keep asking me to do. Yeah.
Well, what's happened in our local authority is that initially we used the form that the local authority provided, which was based on the POR and
the old CEF. Yeah.
And we filled that in for last year. And then when we looked at the new old CEF, through our database, now we have an electronic database that helps us.
I know it isn't. Yeah, yes.
And therefore, I took the stand to say, well, you know what? What I've done last year is in the piece of paper, I'm starting from scratch.
Yes,
Because otherwise, I would have spent weeks and weeks
trying to
fit the right sentence in the right place.
I've got a couple of raised hands. I don't want to pinch Sarah's time, but I think this hand was here first, and then Sarah at the back, yeah. Do people hear that? We'll perhaps come back to that at the end. What they're saying is that they used the POR and then completed the Ofsted CEF with just a comment on each section about where it could be found in the POR. Sarah, quick comment. Quite, yes. Yeah. Yes, dreadful title, sorry, yeah. Quite. I mean, it is a different animal. Yes. Quite. Yeah. It's a snapshot picture. Yeah. Okay, fine. Perhaps come back to that. Okay, so other key current issues are just about meeting the sufficiency duty, developing local indicators. We'll talk a little bit later on about payment by results and what indicators you think we might use, making the best use of resources and dealing with uncertainty, none of which is easy. And these are just the TFC toolkits that you'll find on our website, which is at the bottom, and each of the toolkits on performance management, demonstrating outcomes, that's the templates for the hard data, and commissioning, there's one on business planning too, all have those sections beneath. Okay, so I'm going to hand over to Sarah now, and then we'll come back to some questions and answers. So I'm sure somebody at the back who's quicker than I am will get back to Sarah's presentation.
Hello, I'm Sarah Tatu, and I'm the lead officer for children's centres in Suffolk. We've got 48 centres. Our last round three building hands over tomorrow, so all our centres are finished, but we've also got our first Ofsted inspection tomorrow, so starting tomorrow, so that's going to be interesting. And just picking up on the CEF, we were the same as you. We were in the middle of a cycle of using our local authority CEF, but we haven't made any changes. Our centre managers have stuck with the local authority one, and I guess I'll be able to tell you if Ofsted approved of it after tomorrow. But I didn't want managers spending an awful lot of time on the paperwork until we were absolutely clear about what Ofsted were going to require. And as I've got a school background, I'm sure we'll move eventually to it being an online CEF like it is for schools that you'll have to keep constantly updated, and it'll then be frozen just before your inspection. That's the way it works for schools. Anyway. I'm just going to talk a little bit about planning and performance as it is in Suffolk. And now I'm not holding out any claims that we're doing any better than anybody else, and I'm sure there's lots of people that are doing better than us. So please don't sort of think that that's why I'm here. But Sue is our support from TFC, and I told her what we were doing, and she was kind enough to invite me today. So what have we done in Suffolk? Well, we've had performance very much as a priority, and we invested resource in performance from about 2006. We had a very clunky Excel spreadsheet system in 2006. And then we purchased, soon after that, we purchased eStart. But one thing that we did that's proved to be invaluable is that we guessed that we'd have to do about 48 children's centres. We looked at what we thought would be our notional reach areas, although we hadn't made final decisions about where to put all of them, apart from obviously our Sure Start local programmes and phase ones. But we got ourselves some baseline data because we looked at our notional reaches and started to analyse our EYFS data from 2007. I've got two early years and childcare research officers work in my team. One of them is the Start console manager, and the other she's led on getting the birth data sorted out and all those data sharing agreements, and she also is the one who does some of the analytical work. She also provides, pre-populates all the CEFs with their baseline data. And together, the two early years and childcare research officers pulled together data packs for each children's centre, which they're given annually in January, which gives them all of the data that we've got by, where it's possible, by children's centre reach. As some of you will know, it's not always possible to provide baseline data by children's centre reach. So we developed a performance framework, the cycle that Sue's talked about. We developed it in consultation with our children's centre managers and in consultation with our senior directors. So we included in that the information that we might be asked for strategically and eventually might be asked for by our cabinet. We produce... the eStart system produces monthly... data reports, which are scrutinised by myself, the early years and childcare research officer, and which are shared up to senior managers in the county council, and also shared with individual children's centre managers through their management structure. The eStart reports cover about a dozen factors that we're interested in looking at the data, and they include sort of simple things like numbers of families registered. We look at the numbers of children over one, we'll look at the numbers of children under one who are reached by children's centres, because obviously they're a key group. As Sally Burlington talked about, brain development under one's a key. They're also the most vulnerable group and where you're most likely to get an unexplained death. So we look at under one's reach, BME, number of home visits completed, a whole range, as I say, about a dozen factors are looked at monthly. And we also look at separately, we look at data on how many looked after children, children with child protection plans and child in need plans that the children's centres are working with. We also have an annual performance report which you can pull off eStart. There again, looking at quite a wide range of factors that are of interest to us, child protection, etc. But we also do, at that annual performance review, we do an in-depth analysis of our EYFSP data, which is what I want to talk to you about today, just really to share with you what we found. So the EYFSP data is provided by Children's Centre Reach, and we've been providing that to each Children's Centre manager since 2007. We do some analysis into that data, and on the basis of that analysis, we've done further research, and we're beginning to establish some early good practice models from an analysis of that data. This is an example of what we give the children's centres. This is the 2010 data for Riverside Children's Centre in Lowestoft. It's in the bottom 20% index of multiple deprivation, second most deprived reach in Suffolk, and we do have some pockets of high deprivation in areas of Lowestoft and Ipswich. It reaches about 400 children. And as you can see from that, the Riverside scores on the scales, is that's in blue. And children in that deprived area are doing better in most of those scales than the Suffolk average. So this is a centre that's been inspected. So, you know, I think they're going to have a good story to tell. This is the data trend since 2007. So the pink line is Suffolk, and the blue line is how children have scored in the reach area of Riverside Children's Centre. So as you can see, there's been a year-on-year improvement. It was a phase one centre that opened in late 2005. So I know it's very difficult to say that A has made B happen, but I think that one of the biggest changes in the Lowestoft, in that part of Lowestoft, has been the children's centre services. Other things, the schools, the preschools, have by and large remained exactly as they were, and this has been the money that's been invested in this centre and the services that they have provided. So I think we can say we've certainly had made a contribution to the improvement. I know that all this data, this EYFSP data, does come with a caveat, because obviously the average score is on all the children in the reach area, but the children's centre won't see all the children in the reach area. And I also am very aware that you can't compare like with like. So, for example, we've got a lot of urban children's centres. We've got urban children's centres and very rural children's centres. And some of the factors that might be contributing to this will be different in a rural and an urban model, and I'll talk a bit about that later. Well, just going back to what some of our earlier findings were, this is our 2008 data. I've anonymised it, except for Village Rise, the Ark and Roman Hill, which are highlighted in blue, and the Suffolk average is the blue bar, and the IMD scores are the blue trend line. So the most deprived are at this end and the least deprived at that end. The ARC was a Sure Start local programme, but before Roman Hill and Village Rise centres opened, which were phase two, the ARC's reach area, if you like, you know, was beyond, it included some of Roman Hill and some of Village Rise. And what we noted in the 2008 data was how well those children were doing where the Sure Start local programme had been. Better than the Suffolk average in two cases, and given the levels of deprivation, actually, they were doing really well. So one of the early years and childcare research officers went to the ARC and did a quick piece of research to see what they were doing. So they had a clear vision about the importance of parent-child relationships. These won't be any surprise to you. Close links with health. They got birth data, so they knew where all their children were, and in particular through the partnerships with health visitors where their vulnerable children were. They prioritised home visiting services, and a number of families, although it was an urban area, didn't ever come into the centre. They had all their services delivered to them in their home. Very close links with the library. And as a result of the ARC's success, in partnership with the library service, one of the things we've done in Suffolk is that all of our children's centres are little libraries, so they're all linked into the cross-county library software system. They carry a small collection of books that are suitable for 0 to 5 and books on weaning and things like that. And when parents register on eStart, they also give permission to join the library. So that was because of what the ARC were doing. And the ARC had trained community a lot of community parents. And by 2008, remember, they were a Sure Start Local programme, so they started in 2002. By 2008, they had 60 community parents who were obviously providing additional capacity to their home visiting service. So families, it would be maybe stepped down from having a family support worker to then have the support of a community parent. And the community parents was based on the Thurrock model, which you may be familiar with. There again, we picked up that strategically, and we now deliver community parents through our training, through our training unit. So we shared those messages with our Phase 2 children's centres about what the ARC were doing, and this is one of our late Phase 1s. Kirkley opened in 2002. There again is a 30% centre serving an area of high deprivation, and this year, 2010, the scores in that reach area have improved by 20%. So we think that there again that that children's centre has had a significant impact on the achievement in that area. What did they do? Clear vision, close links with health, prioritised home visiting, small team of volunteers. So very much the same approach as the ARC Children's Centre. I just wanted to show you this last slide. One of the things we did this year was to look at EYFSP against the volume of home visiting. So the pale blue line there again, that's the deprivation scores with the most deprived at this end of the chart. The red and the burgundy lines are the volume of home visiting. So the blue block is the number of carers and families seen, and the red is the number of times they've been seen. And the yellow line shows you the EYFSP scores. So I think you can see there that the centres that are focused, particularly in the areas of disadvantage, is the effect seems to wash out as you go sort of further down. And I have anonymised them, so you're only seeing here the centres where we've got a good story to tell. The centres that are doing high levels of outreach, and I was really pleased we talked about this morning, because I think we've got some real evidence here that centres are doing a lot of outreach, a lot of work in the home, are having a positive impact. And you may say to me, well, you're not comparing like with like. I said about rural centres, it takes a lot longer, doesn't it, to visit a family in a rural centre. But if you look on the chart at Riverside at this end, and FF, which is another children's centre, now those children's centres have the same reach, they're both in an urban area, and they're both actually seeing the same number of children for home visiting, but Riverside is seeing them a lot more frequently and obviously doing a lot more with them, and their EYFSP data is significantly better than Centre FF. So although we can't compare all our 48 because they are different in many ways, we can say that if we compare, we have centres that are very, very similar. Same deprivation, same reach, and it would appear that the amount of home visiting that you do does have an impact.
Thank you very much, sir. I just thought that was such a nice story. It's not the detail of exactly how they count or exactly what they count. It's the fact that somebody spotted the connections between the high level of visiting and the improved EYFS scores, and then built on that, went back to look at what was triggering all of that, and thought, you know, this is something that we need to pick up and use. And as all your centres become more stable, more developed, you'll all be able to do that. But I do think there's been a really strong message about outreach today, so we hope that all gets picked up and heard. Right, inevitably, we haven't quite squashed it into the time that we meant to. Just a quick question. If we were to move to payment by results, what results do you think we should be using? Because I find this quite difficult.
Can I ask, is this going to be payment to centres by result or payment for individuals?
Somebody's saying, is this going to be payment to centres or payments for individuals? It's going to be payment to... we don't know any kind of detail. We're just being asked to look at it. It's going to be payment to centres. Yes, it's not about individuals. There is a little bit about increased budget holding in relation to disabled children, but it's about payment to centres. But is it about payments from the DfE to local authorities, or is it about payments from the local authorities to children's centres? We don't know that yet. But I just would love to have a comment about what you think the key results are. Yes. Well, there are some national indicators. That's what one of our packs shows you, is, you know, how to get at EYFS rates and breastfeeding rates and all of those things. But we don't obesity in all of these countries.
There isn't across local authority. Not all the local authority are at the same level.
No, quite.
Analysing and using the data.
Yeah.
So until that is equal across the country, then it's very difficult.
Yeah. Yes, that's an interesting point, that it's the local authority's responsibility to provide the baseline data. Right. Quite. I know. Taking note, Trudy. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Yes, who's making the difference? Just like Sarah isn't 100% sure, actually, that it's the children's centres that are making the difference, the EYFS. It could be some. But they should still be providing the data.